everybody, to the Polarized Podcast. Welcome back. If you are a fan of us, thank you. This is, if you don't know this podcast, because everybody's first time is always the time that we're recording, we're a podcast about movies, about polarizing movies in particular. On this podcast, we talk about movies that have different scores on Rotten Tomatoes. Sometimes critics love it, sometimes audiences hate it, or vice versa. Those are the movies that we talk about. Today, we are talking about Walk Hard, the 2007 comedy musical starring John C. Reilly. The score is 75% critics and 57% audience. Interesting that that is the case. But we're going to get into it, and I really want to get into it. Yeah, I'm buzzing with excitement. So let's get right into it. I would like to first introduce my co-host. Sometimes we call him the forever guest, Mr. James Lindsay. Hey, how's it going?
Well, hello. Happy to be back. I feel so special. The guy. It really just makes me feel special when you call me the guest every week. It, like, I almost forget that that's my title. And then it does make me feel like I'm a special little man on my
You're a special little man
on a show that I just wandered on, and you know.
Yeah, you were just hanging outside my window, like your nose on the glass, and I'm like, hey, is there a little special guest out here? Get on in here.
Special forever guest? Don't mind if I do.
Ooh. Saunter on in
here. Hello.
Or do the, or whatever. What he does in this movie, what Dewey Cox does in this
movie. Oh, he does like a horse noise. And then she loves it. She likes
it. She loves it. She is so wed because of his horse stomping.
Yes. Animalistic. He walks so hard.
He walks the hardest, any man has ever walked.
He's a hard walker.
He's a hard walker.
Thanks for having me, Brandon.
Yeah, you're good, right? You're giddy. Okay.
Primo. Primo. I'm happy to be here. This is a special app, and this is a special movie, and yes, I'm a special man.
It is.
I'm a special guest.
Wow. You nailed that. Yeah. Okay, great.
I guess we got somebody else here, too, that's might be a little bit more special, but you know, I'm still pretty cool, too. I guess we can move on to him.
I think we got a very cool person as well for an incredibly cool episode. I can already tell this is going to be very silly. It's an exciting thing that we're about to get into. And to help us do that is a longtime friend, which we would have it no other way for this movie. You know him from many great episodes like Hook. I mean, definitely go listen to that episode. It's the best. We call him Blarge, and some people call him Corey, but either way, he's here. Hey,
Blargy.
Hey, hello, how's it going?
Yes, hello. Welcome back.
What an intro, my god.
Welcome, friend.
Thank you. Welcome,
friend. It's a group of hard walkers. It's good to be back.
Yeah, it's amigos walkers.
Yeah, that's what we've always called ourselves. Let's keep it going.
Keep it hard, yeah.
Keep it hard, baby.
What do you think of the Walk the Line movie, Corey? Were you a fan of like that one when that came out? Like the namesake, I guess, for this parody satire movie.
Yeah, I was a fan.
Johnny Cash fan, for that matter.
Yeah, so I don't think I ever was like super, super into Johnny Cash, but that movie was well done, in my opinion, when it came out, and kind of got me into him for a brief period, but it didn't stick really, but and I haven't seen that one in a while.
Me neither.
But it was, I feel like that's almost kind of like a not stereotypical, but like kind of your standard biopic, and but just really well done. But that's kind of like what the other ones aim for almost. Mm-hmm. It was great to send it up, because yeah, that's kind of like the gold standard, I would say.
Definitely like the closest to this time, and definitely like pulls maybe the most from, but also another movie that we watched recently with a good buddy of yours and ours now. He's our friend too, which is good. We're all a bunch of hard walkers all together. We're another one to the Hard Walker crew. What was the crew we just came up with? Whatever. But we watched
Tres Amigos Walkers.
Tres Amigos Walkers.
That's right.
Well, that's a double check.
I can't believe you forgot.
I'm sorry. Since
childhood. Come on.
Guilty as charged.
Hey, there he is.
Yeah, there he is.
Your Honor. Wesson watched The Doors with us, and that was the first time I'd seen that one. And all I could think of was this movie. I still enjoyed myself, and I ended up giving it a good score. Enjoyed that movie despite all the, you know, stereotypes that it falls into along with Walk the Line. But damn it,
this is the best musician biopic you've ever seen. Because that's understandable.
The Dewey Cox story, sure, yeah,
right.
And then there's something like what's the Marky Mark one, the Rockstar one. Is it just called Rockstar?
It's called Rockstar.
Yeah. That movie is hilarious. And it's not trying to be funny, but God damn it. It's so fucking funny. Movie. It's so bad. And it does all those things in the same, but it's on the level of like Zoolander or something. And it's like, does it know what it's doing? Cause it's the guy acts like Derek Zoolander.
Have you guys seen the, it's a little more recent, like in the past maybe 5 years, but it's Jack Black, and he's like the polka guy.
The polka king.
That shit is so fucking weird, but I remember like cracking up at that one.
I watch it and I forget all about it. But I do. I recall what you're talking about.
He
has the same kind of like mustache and look as like that Bernie movie, I feel like.
That's the thing.
Kinda, yeah.
Those seem so similar, but I'm sure they're not.
The Polka King. Yeah, the Polka King was, and it was based on a real guy. I'm pretty sure. So yeah, it wasn't just like a spoof or like a goofy thing, but it was fucking hilarious.
That's good, because Bernie, you think is going to be funny, but it ends up being more dark than it is. Dark comedy, I guess. And I think it's based on a real guy too.
Yeah.
Maybe.
But different movies.
It's a pretty good movie.
Those are different movies for sure.
Movies. The ones we're discussing are all different.
He's so impish and whimsical though.
That's why they have different names, is because they're all different movies.
Damn, well, we should get to the bottom of this.
That's a fun fact for
that's okay. That's what we're gonna go down. Okay.
Yeah.
So
there are different movies.
But if there's movies with the same name, can they be still different movies?
Different?
Oh, as a matter of fact, yes. As long as they're not the same movie, they are different movies. That's my understanding.
Even if you were just to start it immediately after the other one, or in the middle of it?
I'd have to check on that.
What if you start one and then you finish with the other?
What if you started?
You're getting into some gray area now. Okay.
I'm
being a little stinker. I'm being devil's advocate.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah.
Another excellent movie, of course.
Which is different. It's kind of the cornerstone of your guys' whole podcast.
I'm seeing Oppenheimer.
That there are different movies. Each episode, I think, of your show has a different one.
Well, now that you put it like that, that's something I can get my brain around. If you make it about me, then I can.
Exactly. So think about like every episode you guys have ever done, different. Right.
Yeah. Whoa. Mind blown.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's probably why we didn't just like hit record and never turn it off.
Right. Remember you had like stuff to do in your lives. So yeah.
Whoa. Maybe that'll be our next one.
Just one movie forever.
Yeah.
Yep.
We should do a sister pod called The Movie. Whoa. Just talking about the movie.
Wow. Yeah. Hey, Brandon, I know you got that direct line to Hollywood. Can you pull it up real quick?
Yeah.
Hello, Hollywood.
You got the special red phone. Thank God. Thank God. It's got that like the turnstile thing and everything. Ooh.
Oh,
we needed that. Those are all like the movies that this movie's
not this movie that we're talking
riffing on. Was that
not this movie that we're talking about? No. Those are different movies.
Yeah,
those are,
yeah. Well, I don't know. That's what we're trying to figure out here. I'm glad glad we started there.
Yeah.
Maybe I just don't get it fully yet.
We need to start it back again. Got it.
Roll it up.
He needs to think about his entire life.
Nice segue.
That's kind of where we're at. Yeah. I need to think about my entire life.
The name Dewey Cox allows for an immediate joke, right? I mean, I think that's the first joke of the movie is the fact that he's called Cox.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
and that's used to great effect in literally hundreds of ways, arguably thousands. I don't know. But like, it seems like Cox is used. Okay,
I don't know. I don't know about that, but
okay. I knew it was a stretch.
Okay. There were a handful of good Cox jokes.
Reel me back in. Thanks.
I don't want to commit to thousands, but
this movie might be like 5 days long if there's thousands of lines.
Yeah. Well, if we're talking every movie that's ever been made, maybe thousands of Cox jokes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But again, different. This is a different movie. So,
but different is okay. Right.
Yeah. But different's okay.
Okay.
Different. Okay.
It's okay to be different.
Wow. Oh yes. It's okay to be different.
I need Cox.
Yeah. Oh man.
Yes. Thank you for that.
He's got to think about his entire life. And that's walked the line. I think he's looking at like a buzzsaw or something at Folsom Prison before the Folsom Prison show.
I almost wish I had revisited Walk the Line before I rewatched this one. Cause I could tell like there were moments where not that it was scene for scene or shot for shot, but it was like, oh, this is totally referencing something that happened in that movie, but taking it way over the top. But
luckily it doesn't depend on it too much.
Absolutely
really happy with that. And it's not completely scary movie. And it ends up being more of like a Mel Brooks thing. It ends up being like a
great
Spaceballs or like Young Frankenstein or whatever. It's like spoofing the genre and it uses maybe the specific template, but it ends up being so much bigger than that and plays it straight too. Like that was a big comparison. I was thinking this time around of like, this would be if like Mel Brooks were to do rock biopic, but it's also, it's like almost on the same level as Spinal Tap. That one just has the layer of the, you know, mockumentary style.
Right. I loved that this one was kind of like free form, right? Like there wasn't, it wasn't like it was really trying to say something or trying to completely spoof Walk the Line or a different movie. But it was, took a hit off that pen. Now I'm getting deep. No, it was kind of like, consider it like its own. God damn it.
Stop. Okay. We're not going to go down that rabbit hole anymore.
All roads lead back to that truth. But I don't know. I love the movie. I'll leave it at that.
Oh, yeah. We can start there, like how classic this is, because I'm almost positive.
I am ready to give my score.
Let's do it. All three of us, I'm almost positive, saw this movie in theaters together.
Like, yes.
I'm almost 100%.
100%.
Yeah. Have to. Yes. Yeah. That's almost a certainty.
And we were kind of in the same area. We were going to college, I feel like, at this point, right? What year was this?
Brandon said 07, but I thought
this is 07.
Oh, 07.
08. I thought it was a little later than that.
I thought so too.
I could be wrong.
Maybe we were in high school age, just like going out to R-rated movies for the first time, but I thought we had graduated.
Yeah.
Either time, it was like the perfect age for us to see, to see this movie.
Oh, sure.
And I remember seeing Ray and Walk the Line shortly before and those winning awards and being a big deal. And just getting like the most I possibly could out of this movie, seeing it with your friends at that age, and just cracking up throughout the movie, which I still do to this day, being like seeing it over 10 to 20 times. I don't know.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. And like, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think all of us, why this movie works so well and to the age point and this coming into our lives at the perfect time is that I think all of us had probably seen a Mel Brooks movie before, had seen Airplane before, and maybe had seen some of these biopics of musicians that maybe our parents liked, you know, and were at least familiar with the concept of that. And also too, from the get-go, all of the people in this movie, I think we all had some kind of a little bit of a little bit of them, you know, in some form or fashion, like Tim Meadows, for example, like to start like, this whole off. Right.
It was like who of, you know,
comedy,
the comedy yeah. scene of the late 2000s. Yeah.
Like, a lot of cameos, SNL, Lorne Michaels stuff, but it wasn't a Lorne Michaels movie. It was a Judd Apatow thing, which Judd Apatow was such hot shit at that time as well.
Irreverent comedies of our youth. Right.
So irreverent. Yeah.
Because we had just talked yesterday, James had presented a ranking of best movies about high school, and Superbad has got to be up in the top, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
definitely.
That knocked up Judd Apatow. Like, we all knew that name, too. It's so crazy how prepped we were, or how perfect this movie seems for us in our sensibilities, you know, to have really been primed and ready for a movie like this to come out where we got so much of the humor of it.
We got
even to this day, it works.
We got Anchorman, PG-13. Fucking classic movie that we quoted endlessly. And then we got Talladega Nights, which was also PG-13, which was attainable and easy for us to see and still very funny. Had John C. Reilly and Will Ferrell. I think Step Brothers probably came after this one because they knew what a good pair they were. But I feel like this is sandwiched between Talladega Nights and Step Brothers. But having that prime of
it's right around that.
John C. Reilly and Talladega Nights, I feel like pushing him into the center really helped a lot too, even though he was always like, oh, it's that guy from whatever. We were getting into Paul Thomas Anderson movies at that. I know I was.
Me too.
Magnolia and shit. So that was so cool to just see him in a starring role and how fucking well he is, and how good in this movie and how good he is in overall at like every facet of what is required. In this movie, there's a lot required of him. Man. It's like a Gene Wilder level.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Yeah. Even if you just look at kind of the arc of what he's supposed to do, it's like a man's entire life. You know? There's the like kind of funny joke in the beginning where he's 14 years old, but he's really Yeah. And it just, I mean, if you start there and go, you know, through his 70s or whatever, at the end of the movie, it's like, he's so goofy and so irreverent, but also like pretty good acting chops to nail that whole life of someone, you know, like it's an amazing role.
Fully realized character and comedic through and through. Yeah.
And is also
and full of stereotypes. Like it's everything. Sorry.
Like that's also a good example of how sincerity is like this movie's like biggest weapon. Yeah. Because we had already going into a movie like this had seen very insincere spoof and comedy movies, and comedy at this time too was also very. Trying the edginess of it, the immaturity of it, was so prevalent, and the fact that there are so many ways that this movie could have just relied on, you know, this thing, right? Mm-hmm. Here's this thing, and just not really care about the movie or care about the material. Like you just get such an overwhelming sense by the people who wrote this movie, who are starring in this movie, love what they're spoofing and are really into the things that they are you know, doing the satire of and trying to impersonate. It's the best.
Yeah.
If they took infectious.
It was made with love, I think.
Big time. If they took even the same cast, the same people, and just diverted their energy towards making a drama, they could have done it, and it would have been as good, I feel like, as a lot of other rock, you know, biopics and all of that. But and I think reading some of, you know, there was an oral history online that you can find that's pretty great. And Judd Apatow was talking about how he felt kind of sad seeing like these amazing songs and being used for comedy and fodder sometimes. Like, obviously that's what they were going for, but also there's a part of him that I think was like a little sad that it was taken that way when everyone was working, yeah, really hard on and putting their full selves into it. But that's exactly what's needed into.
Well, I mean, it's kind of
right. An amazing comedy is that sincerity. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of, this one, like, for me is kind of like elevated comedy almost, like, cause it is hilarious the entire way. And it's not really trying to do anything except make it's not deep or anything, but yeah, I don't know.
It kind of is a little bit, which is
there's so many references. There's so many like great references, and just like you can tell that they did their homework, that they care about it. It's close to them, you know. Like, yeah. So I feel like it's not just some stupid like goofy movie. It's like, I don't know.
It is.
I hold it in pretty high regard.
But even like it's catering to a rock historian sort of sense of like humor or whatever. Like it's even going beyond just the making a movie about it, but actually the history of like having a young girlfriend and having a chimp as a pet. Like, I think that was an Elvis, and you know, obviously Michael Jackson,
Michael Jackson,
tons of Elvis stuff. Yeah.
Pulling from a lot of, the giraffe.
And the whole meditation scene where they meet with the Maharishi. That's Beatles, Beach Boys. I mean, that was their whole trip in the 60s. So it was, there was a lot of like touchstones of cultural stuff that actually happened, you know, that they drew from. So it was interesting as well as hilarious. But yeah, first and foremost, fucking balls to the wall hilarious.
100%. And it's starting with the children and already getting into the pace at which the movie's going to be, which is going to run throughout, and something that is already makes you look at all these other movies in a funnier light too, because there is no time for any trivialities in the movie because they got to get through their entire life before they go on. And so every scene is important. Every single person that walks into frame has a big deal in his life.
Totally.
And they're going to talk about it, like literally to your face. Just the 60s are a very important time. You know, they're going to the subtext is never subtext. It's always just displayed right out in front, and that humor, the minute you pick up on, is great. And I'm not, the polarization we'll get to as well, but I'm sure there's a lot of people that like watch this movie and maybe even want like a scary movie sort of thing. And maybe there's others that, you know, we're looking for a different kind of humor or something, but this whole portion with the kids is great, and playing the guitar for the guys is just classic.
Oh, so funny. And
I think that's a Ray thing. That's him.
It is a Ray thing, but again, comedy, it's the joke per second numbers got to be so high because
oh
my God. JPM Brandon. This one's the jokes, fucking blistering.
It's up there. It's up there.
It's so hard. We're not going to go through this movie, you know, minute by minute, no, but just some chunks. Just to encapsulate, when we say the kids section, we're talking about the children's section. We're talking about so many funny things happen, and you know, all of it culminating right into the having of the brother and like really the, you know, the emotional thrust of the movie. And the fact that he gets halved,
cut in half pretty bad.
I'm cutting that pretty bad.
It's a particular bad case of someone being cut in half.
Well, I was unable to attach
his top half to his bottom half. Oh,
speak English now.
Scientist. The father. Okay. Oh, the father God. And the
legendary character actress Margot Martindale.
And Margot Martindale, the parents, because okay, yeah, the emotional thrust is his brother getting halved by a machete. Dad told us not to play with the machetes.
We're like, young, nothing bad can happen to us today.
And then that's preceded by them doing a bunch of very like dangerous things, like what they're doing metal work, and it just shows the sparks hitting the hay.
Playing chicken with like
one's
a tractor.
On a horse, the other's on a tractor. They're playing chicken.
Swinging the rattlesnake around, like.
Which oh man, when the dad they at the end he's doing his machete fight, how he does that.
Oh yeah, he does. Well, I love the little callback at the end where he's like, when his dad halves himself, and then Dewey's like, "You're gonna make it. It's the 70s now. We've come a long way.
There's all types of new procedures."
Oh god,
it's like I guess I could have done something different than spend my whole life training my mind and body to kill you in a machete fight.
I love that little subtlety because I feel like I didn't pick up on that too much the first, you know, as a younger guy, but the that was such a thing that was glossed over even in that scene. But it's like, wow, he spent his whole entire life training not only his mind but his body to for this moment, and then he fucking fucked it up.
Well, there's just
really badly.
There's almost no line in this movie that isn't a joke, right? Like to talk about, you know, upon rewatches, you're like, oh, they said this, you know, and you didn't catch it because it was just this funny subtext to it, like a joke on a joke. And a hat on a hat is sometimes I say, but these are fun and cool hats, so it's okay.
Oh, for sure.
There's a lot of fun outfits in general.
A lot of fun outfits in this movie, especially that scene in the end when he's wearing that turtleneck with the V sweater and the white pants and the white shoes. Oh man, and his hair's feathered like he's a Bridget Fonda.
The hippie point is really great when he's jumping on the trampoline, and I like his guilty as charged attire. That's kind of the, I guess what would that be? Kind of Johnny. I guess it's still Johnny Cash. Little bit.
It was like the outlaw country kind of thing.
His voice really caters to the Roy Orbison thing, which I guess really comes to it in the one song of I've got a perfect wife is a perfect life. Which his voice just sounds so good, so it's
and
you're also able to take in the content of the song and the lyricism. And the editing is done in a way that it's all it's a musical, which somehow it goes through the guise of being a rock and roll biopic, but it really ends up being almost just like a musical. And it is through the power of his singing, which can be goofy at times, and then just so sincere and beautiful when he hits those kind of higher falsetto Roy Orbison kind of notes with that song. And of course the last song ends up being very funny, but also beautiful.
Kind of moving.
It is. Well, because you just have fallen in love with Dewey Cox. You know, you've seen him
a lot of stuff.
We've seen his entire life. He's such a what?
Like a Homer Simpson quality of like, he just keeps fucking. fucking up, you know, like he'll just get, maybe he's growing and it's like, no, he's an, he doesn't.
Oh, you're breaking up, Corey.
Oh, shit. Yeah, I know. How do I? Yeah, I feel like this happens every time.
That's OK. Maybe leave and then come back in. We'll. Or. Yeah. Oh, you. You unfroze right there, but I'm not sure if that'll help or not.
It's a beautiful ride.
Beautiful ride. I mean, we can get a little sample of some of the tunes here, just so anybody who hasn't seen the movie in a while and wants to get a little idea of the songs. Something that's great about it, you know, just speaking of the music, is like they really recorded like full tracks, even if you only get a snippet in the movie.
And they sound great.
Yeah, there are like about 100 songs written by these two guys, or like just hold themselves up in the Best Western and wrote a shit ton of songs catering to like a Buddy Holly song or an Elvis song or you know, Beach Boys or Beatles, whatever. And they recorded like something around like 50 of them or whatever. But let's do this Bob Dylan one, and we'll get a little taste of because I think this is a good example of, he's doing a parody of Bob Dylan. His voice ends up sounding good, but then the lyrics are fucking bananas and are silly. So it's just, all those things mixing together comes from a place as well of like the songwriters being willing to make fun of themselves and take the shit out of like serious songwriting or whatever. And it's kind of, from everyone involved, it's tough.
It's a job.
It's a tough job. When the moon hits your eye,
mailboxes drip like a big pizza pie.
We had mentioned Spinal Tap earlier. There, what, John Michael Higgins, right, is in Spinal Tap, the record producer. It's like, his feet, the Jewish people was shaking because of how bad that song was.
And the sorority mascot,
greatest song ever. It's
like the pressing, passing, stinging, half synthetic fabrications.
That was time. That was probably one of my favorite parts in the rewatch. I don't know if you guys can. Am I coming in? Can you hear me?
Yes. Yeah, that was a Bob Dylan song.
Okay. I think it's just delayed, but. But yeah, I fucking love that whole scene where it's got like the Billy Madison-esque kind of like, I award you no points, like that whole vibe to it. But oh my God,
could change my mind.
He goes, what is it?
And then
but I just don't think it's going to happen.
I highly doubt it. And then you got Harold Ramis, you got Phil Rosenthal, you got Martin Starr all there as the record producers. This is after the Craig Robinson scene as well, which is just extremely funny. And that's the kind of like Mel Brooks humor that is tough to pull off and ends up being very funny. And or Ben Stiller kind of, Traffic Thunder stuff too, just using race to in your humor in a way that gets the reaction out of the people that see him singing that song, and you get the reaction of like, is he fucking doing this? And then having them be like, all right, we accept it.
Then they started to dance erotically.
Yeah. People come here to dance erotically. Was
very erotic.
Extremely erotic, yeah.
I mean, it was pretty much fucking without taking your clothes off.
Well, it was great juxtaposing that like original little talent show thing that he did with like, you know, take my hand and his dad's going off about, you know, who has hands? The devil. And he uses them for holding. but then it kind of goes quickly from that scene to, you know, that other venue where it's like, oh, this is like, you know, if only his dad could see what these people are. Oh my God.
Mm-hmm. And then he goes to record a song and it's not working out. We get that whole part I just mentioned. And then he just gives a stern look to Chris Parnell, Matt Besser, and Tim Meadows, which band, excellent. We'll talk about them as well. Like, they're such a big, big, huge part of every
absolutely
a lot of big moments in the scene. They learned how to play music. They learned how to play all those instruments. So that's really them really playing a lot of those scenes. But I love that is such a classic scene in all of these movies. And I haven't even seen Bohemian Rhapsody, but I guess that's a big part of like Another One Bites the Dust or whatever is, where they're just like, okay, oh, we get it now. And then all of a sudden the song just happens
like this.
Yeah. And then they all start dancing in the recording studio. It's on the radio immediately while they're
in, like, 35 minutes.
And then he walks out of the recording studio and everyone immediately rushes him with the record to sign. Yeah. Everything just moves so quickly. He moves into the house with Kristen Wiig. They have two children per scene that they get every time they come back to him. She's constantly downplaying him. The parents constantly don't believe him. All these things are so forced that it ends up being so hilarious, because there's no reason why anyone should feel this way. It's like wrong kid, dad, and all that stuff. But then even with Kristen Wiig, there's no reason why. No one's ever made any money off music, do it.
Well, but they do that a lot, in that, like, they go from her. The first thing you pretty much hear her say is like, I will always support your dreams, even though I'm 12 years old or something like that. You know, and then before, like, 2 minutes of movie time go by and she's like, you'll never make it. And it's a funny. Like the fact that they go from one extreme to the other so quickly. It's
very airplane.
It's part of the arc in those movies. Yeah. For the first wife to go through that period of like, I never see you anymore. You don't take care of the kids. And which is her next phase. Miss of course. Birthdays. Gonna miss some birds.
There was a bit of, and maybe you guys figured this out back in the day, but this recent time I watched it, what's her name? Pam from The Office. Jenna Fisher. So her, I was almost seeing her as like a Yoko Ono type character, where it's like, this is someone who's an artist who is actually, like, you know, seeing him for who he is and not based, you know, like John Lennon's Cynthia, you know, was kind of the Kristen Wiig character. But you know, there, that's an archetype in rock, though, you know, like with
the first one,
not just Lennon, but to me I was like, oh, that's, yeah, I kind of saw what they were getting at there.
Okay, yeah, because Jenna Fisher's character is based on the for sure.
Yeah, Johnny Cash's wife,
right?
June,
yeah, a great name.
We got married in a fever.
So, but, oh my god!
But to bridge both of them also is a joke, because he gets double married.
You can't get double married.
The double married was great. I'm sorry.
And it's got to be like it is for one of us.
It's not what it looks like.
Turn it around on her about the whole thing about drinking the milk.
You drank that milk in the middle of the night. Yeah.
So I guess you can drink all the milk. And
I'm just a liar. I'm a cheater.
Guilty as charged.
Yeah. Oh man.
and then she's like, "Don't,
dude." That is
thinking about a song right now.
That is such a relatable thing. Like, not it to that extreme, but like, I don't know, if you write songs at all or think in those terms, it's like titles are such a big thing, you know. And when you get a little gem like that that someone throws right, oh. Sorry, I'm going to tune out everything else you're saying, but that was a cool little line right there.
That napkin.
Yeah, but he takes it so, like, I mean, his marriage is falling apart and he's just like, holy shit, that's a great title for a song. But then he does it every time and it's like a smash hit.
And then and then everyone's commentating on what's happening to him. Like, the Guilty as Charged song is so funny, because that really is a montage in a movie that has, I guess, I haven't counted, but I'm sure quite a few. And that seems to be quite one that a lot happens, because he gets into uppers and downers. Uppers and downers, God. Dewey.
This is the next logical step for you.
That was early Dewey. This is middle Dewey.
This is middle Dewey.
And then he's yelling at his monkeys like, you just.
There's a lot of good
bananas like, and touch yourself. Well, fuck you.
Oh God. There's so many good like breaking the fourth wall kind of moments, like not explicitly, but yeah, like, you know, this is a dark fucking period. Like every time he says that, it's just like, oh my God, like, yeah.
He also rips out the sinks every time.
Exactly. Oh, they're God. Ripping out the sinks and
never a line about it or anything, but just
gag. And then when his dad dies, he's like sawing the couch in half and like, you know, day to night. Yeah, all like for hours, just not making progress.
And he's cutting all the flowers.
The drawers. He goes to the drawers in the kitchen and starts bending the spoons. And then we get to see in like all just facial expressions. We understand what he's going through. Where he first starts off pissed, and then he's like,
and then he's like, I just have to do this. Well, I guess
I gotta finish it. I'm over it.
But this is just my life.
Yeah. Made me think Matt Barnes driving all the way down to beat Derek Fisher's ass.
Oh, right.
Man, you had been mad for a long time.
Yeah, that's a long drive.
To bend all
30 hours, ass. Right?
Drove back 30 hours.
30 hours, right? Hell yeah.
Oh, my God. Okay, so guilty as charged. Then he goes to rehab.
Rehab?
We get, Bernie's in this. We got, like, kind of still young, sexy Bernard from Bernard from Santa Claus.
Oh, who?
Bernard,
the manager, as the manager at this time.
You know Bernard from the Santa Claus?
I don't.
He's the main elf.
Okay.
He's an Oppenheimer too.
You know, it's not a big Santa Claus fan.
Okay.
No.
He role in the Santa Claus, and then he's in this movie and goes on to do like other things like Oppenheimer. He's in recently, which he's is kind of crazy.
Incredible actor.
Yeah. But it's cool to see
in this one.
He was the manager. So he's like trying to get him off the trampoline at that one.
Oh, right.
Okay. Harold Ramis is the producer. He's talking to him about rehab. Rehab.
Yeah. Rehab.
And seeing Phil Rosenthal just made me so happy. I'm such a big Somebody Feed Phil fan. And I mean,
And then
everybody loves Raymond. It's good too.
Pretty good.
It's pretty good.
Everybody loves Raymond Rocks. But so in that scene, though, we get a line that I've used, I feel like, in my life so many times, which is I want more blankets and less blankets.
Oh my God. At the same time.
Yeah. Yep. He needs more blankets.
Blankets. Well, that's the funny part is who it's coming from, because it's coming from the nurse. So it's like we somehow have to just listen to what he needs. Like, we are the experts, but like, no, this is what he needs.
What's great is it's just so truncated on these like just singular scenes. So he goes, he's like, I guess I'm going to rehab. And that is the only scene of him really like going through anything. Is just like, I'm hot. Oh, I'm cold. Oh. And then he's like, thinks he's out. And then he wakes up. This is so funny. Where he's like, ah. And then that scene's over. And then he goes to like, all these blankets have saved my life.
Yep. Yeah.
And then he has a sex scene with Jenna Fisher, where you see his abs and everything, which is like a Naked Gun reference. Or like, I don't know. That's a Naked Gun.
Totally. It is so Naked Gun. Yeah.
And they just start kicking the shit out of each other.
Oh my God. Throwing each other around.
I love you.
This is one of those episodes where it devolves numerous times and just like, oh, you remember this? You remember that? It's so funny.
Yeah.
Oh, that
part was that's kind of how it is. Yeah. There's so many like
beauty of this
distinctly like memorable, you know, moments, but
Double M's.
Yeah, and we mentioned the band earlier. I gotta just say again, like the amount of times I've seen this movie, I think they have just grown so much in my esteem of how
much
this movie works. Because I think when you first see this, it's like, oh yeah, they're like band members in the back and everything. But
no, not only
playing the instruments and just portraying the humanity of what you know you should be feeling towards everything, of like they're not on board with this and they're all kind of dealing with what he's putting out to and being the frustrated band members, just gives the emotional core of it all, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. And they're fucking hilarious too. Yeah. We, Brandon and I were talking off pod about the fuck ancient Egypt.
Oh my God.
Cats. Like that shit is like, it stands up to this day. And you never once paid for drugs.
Not once.
I think Tim Meadows might have like the most quotable lines per things he said. Cause I almost I everything so. He says in this movie is
it is. He has a very high ratio of quotables.
Yeah. There's a lot of high stats going on in this movie. JPMs, you know, laughs. Per jokes.
LPJs. LPJs. JPMs, LPJs. JPJs.
He's bad and heavy. Yeah.
He made a tomato.
And then, yeah, Matt Besser has such an interesting way of delivering lines and his form of deadpan. Yeah. And I don't think he ever smiles in the movie.
He has such a low voice, too.
Uh-huh. But he's also just kind of rolls over, like all of them just roll over to all his bullshit where he just takes his wife. Like he's like, this is my wife, do it. Well, yeah. Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. They don't know how to stand up to him until that scene where they finally, like, it all comes out, like decades of, you know, abuse pretty much. And then, yeah, it's all about just, you never paid for drugs and you get us these stupid fucking cat statues or whatever.
I want an army of didgeridoos. And right. you just stand up to him one other time, which is funny. He's just like, you sound like some kind of punk.
Yeah.
But that song is so funny, like tuned up to like a kind of fast paced punk sort of version.
Oh, it's great.
It's such a good song.
Faster.
What drug is he on? It because it's like him doing a drug with a Tim Meadows.
It was cocaine. And then it was cocaine. Yeah.
It was cocaine.
Yeah.
Turns all your bad feelings into good feelings.
Yeah.
It's a nightmare.
Well, and I love that too because he's you know just completely raging out on stage and then he kind of he snaps back to reality. He's like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. Like you know because he When his bandmate is kind of like challenging him on it, he snaps back at him and is like, "Don't fucking tell me what to do." And then he's like, "Oh my God, I'm so sorry."
He gets very bipolar. He turns into so apologetic and crying. And then Jenna Fisher walks in immediately after so fast.
I love how it's like things just kind of like happen to him, right? Like he's not he in the beginning he's so driven and I'm going to, you know, follow my dreams. And he does, but it's like, it's all happenstance that good and bad things happen to him. It's like, he doesn't take any responsibility for. And, I don't know. I think that's what, like, it makes his character like lovable because, you know, obviously in real life, we wouldn't like a person, but he's so naive, but like, well-meaning and just like you almost just feel bad for him sometimes but he can't help himself like
that Homer comparison is great. I love very Homer
when he promises Jenna Fisher that Darlene that he's like done with the drugs and that he just PCP like while he's hugging her. She's like, what'd you put in your mouth?
Yeah, because that's, I mean,
ECP.
Him going to the Beatles, he's gone through rehab. He's all good. Yeah. He's like going to these the hippy dippy parties where something's happening here. And it ain't exactly
obvious. Oh, that was so good.
So good. There's a scene in The Doors where they do acid and go to a dinner party. And it's a,
this kind of reminiscent of that. And then, but for him to go get out of rehab, be successful and then go to the hang out with the Beatles and then immediately get addicted to hallucinogens is such a funny turn of events. And that is so like, Sergeant Pepper's, Pet Sounds, but
even though he's having
one of the funniest scenes,
he's having a bad trip on LSD. But then he comes to, he goes, maybe I do have some demons. And then Ringo goes, do you want some more? And he's like, yep. Like, why? You're having a bad time. Like, why do you need more?
It's the only time Tim Meadows doesn't give it to him. It's just, it's the Beatles. Those Beatles.
Yeah.
And the line delivery by Jenna Fisher leading to that is like, you know, there's just this effect on it because she's like, let's drop acid with the Beatles, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Okay, if you promise one time, let's drop acid with the Beatles.
And you're like, yeah!
And then immediately cut to him, trampoline and like didgeridoos. And then, yeah, the whole like, what did you just put in your mouth when she finally calls him out on it again and he loses his bandmates?
And then that interview with Jane Lynch, where he goes, he's talking beforehand about like what he's gonna say, and he's like, just tell him you don't do LSD anymore. It's like, well, I'm not gonna commit to that. I don't do LSD right now.
Make sure you watch Dewey Cox show, and I'm not mainlining PCP anymore.
Oh my god!
Do some fucking homework. I have no sense of smell.
I got no sense of smell.
Ask about his family life, like
all of this hot.
How do you wake up and smell the roses every morning? And
well, I love what he said about his kids. About how are all your 48 kids? And he's like, well, I don't really know them at all. And then he starts saying like, yeah, I just don't think I should have custody. I should be able to choose that, you know? Yeah, I'm locked in a custody battle. I'm trying to say I shouldn't have custody.
It's been forced upon me.
They're trying to force it on me. And then he goes, yeah, I'm sure they're out there somewhere watching the Dewey Cox show.
Yeah, he tries to plug the show to his own 48 children or whatever.
Oh, my God.
So ridiculous. That stretch is really funny because that's the excess stretch. That's like him trying to retain like relevancy, and he's trying to like, oh, right, just do walk hard again. People love walk hard, or like old people love walk hard.
It was great when they kind of like at the very end kind of like showed him that like, oh, your track is being sampled by a rap artist now.
What was Nutsack? What was the
Little Nutsack?
Nutsack.
Cox and Nutsack will be a little.
It'll be a package. Oh, that was really good. And was that guy? That was a guy from Big Bang Theory.
Big Bang Theory, I think.
Yeah.
He's funny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a funny. His character was funny for sure.
The whole montage to get there is like after. Okay, so after the Jonah Hill thing. He goes back to rehab and then has the Jonah Hill thing, which is a pretty funny, that seems very improvised sort of thing between them two. Goes to confront his dad, gets halved, and that whole rage thing is just hilarious, of him getting mad with the sinks and cutting the sofa.
I
already mentioned all that. Yeah. But the montage to get him to be old is him reconnecting with all of his children, because out of nowhere after that rage, little Dewdrop comes in.
Little Dewdrop.
I'd like nothing else than to have a catch with you.
And also, like, why did that mean so much to him? I don't know.
Because that's just such a stereotypical father son,
right?
Like, this is how you connect with your children as a man.
And in order for him to play catch with everyone, it takes like 50 years or whatever.
Yeah. It takes like 30 years, whatever.
Yeah,
and him realizing how long it's gonna take to play catch with all these kids, he's like, oh,
fuck. He's like, oh boy. All right.
Yeah,
he gets some of the scenes too that we get like interstitched in this part of the movie after that is like him walking with all these children in a field. And remember that scene where he's doing like the math,
their homework? Oh my god. Well, no, it's something about the context of a Shakespeare novel or play or something, and it seems tells him the answer to the question.
Write it down.
That's a freebie. That's a mulligan. Oh my god.
I missed that, and so many times of viewing that, caught it this time, and I lost it.
That's what I mean. Like, there's the obvious, scenes and lines and stuff, but pretty much everything that happens on screen is fucking funny in some way. It's amazing.
It really is. It's something to behold. Just
there's no fat.
No, every single person's funny. Every word spoken is funny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's, and if you're trying to make a comedy, that man, that's the greatest.
And you're taking the shit out of something that should be serious and still showing your talents throughout it as well. Right. It's great how it ends. He gets his smell back. He smells that shit, baby.
Smell that shit, baby.
And this final fucking award show is nuts. How they get like the talent that they get in this scene is like having Jewel, Lyle Lovett, and Jackson Brown, and then fucking one of them. It says off screen. It's almost like it's supposed to be Lyle Lovett, but it was ADR. I don't know if it's actually him doing it, but they're doing their Walk Hard song, I think. And then all of a sudden, goes and Ghostface Killer.
Yeah, kind of like Ghostface like shows Wu-Tang. Up at one point.
But then like announce him like Wu-Tang too, which is so funny, except in a goofy Lyle Lovett voice. And then he comes out and starts rapping over, and then like Jewel's like hard.
It's like, this is amazing. Dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that was, it was really well done. I mean, that whole, award acceptance thing. And then he's got the Viagra this time instead of, the other hard drugs or whatever. Yeah. It's like, it gives you a boner.
Well, now, Corey, Viagra is still a hard drug. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, but, I do know what you mean.
And then in such an amazing line is that if you have an erection lasting more than 4 hours, call more ladies.
Call more ladies.
Such a good line. Tim Meadows, man. Too many is good lines.
Do you think he just read the script for that movie and was like, hey, this, I'm getting all the good ones.
I will learn drums for this.
Right.
And then, he says no and says, then sees the young ladies walking by, and then says no to them as well, and he's not going to succumb to the temptations.
That was never lost on me. I always loved that part.
So good.
The temptation,
my girl
talking about.
And that final song is a great fucking song. Eddie Vedder. Apparently the speech they edited it down from was like a 5 minute long speech or something, but the way that he delivers it is amazing.
Oh,
it's
amazing.
I would believe that he was giving it to fucking Neil Young at the fucking Rock and Roll Hall of Fame or something is how he was describing it.
Let me pull up a quote of, cause he calls him a bunch of names, right?
Oh yeah. tallest midget or something.
The giant midget. And
you get the beautiful right, you get the final montage of summing up his, and I think there's like a lot of deleted scenes I think they show here too. I think the Parnell getting blown away and he's using him as a human shield is great. And there's it's just so good to know this movie is filled to the brim with stuff that they had to, you just interstitch other stuff in to fill it out because there's just so much good stuff.
Yeah.
The credit song is nice. Hey daddy or whatever it says. I forget. Great songs.
I forget if I watched the whole thing through the credits, but
yeah, it's just a track, but it's a movie that made me want to see more like it. And unfortunately, I don't know. I feel like, I remember seeing this movie, but then I remember after this seeing stuff like Love Guru and Zohan and stuff. And I was like, man, comedy was doing really well, but obviously there's still good comedy movies out there. But this one was something that was still on that heel of, I feel like those really good Apatow movies, which still went on after this, of course. The Will Ferrell stuff and Tropic Thunder and all that, all those good movies, but this one is tough to be a really good parody, and so far and so much so that it's a great satire as well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I got it, guys.
Oh, good.
Okay, if Elvis and Buddy Holly are the chain and Abel or Cain and Abel of rock and roll, Bruce Springsteen is Zachariah, Iggy Pop is Methuselah. And of course, Neil Young is the wise prophet Ezekiel. Uh-huh. Then what does that make Dewey Cox?
Right.
Shit. And then that's it. Wait.
Oh, it'll
We're talking, I think before that he's introducing him with, you know, all of his nicknames or whatever, but I forgot about that. Like, yeah, the biblical, that was fucking great.
Yeah. I mean, he delivers it so well. And I think, you know, let's just, maybe we'll watch it here. I'm going to share my screen with you guys and we can get a little taste of that before we go on to some some reviews from critics and audiences.
James, we also have a voice memo by Danny.
Oh yes, chat. Okay, we'll play that after this.
Gentlemen, Eddie Vedder.
He's like Malignant. Fuck yeah!
Oh, this is the extended. Oh, this might be the long version.
He's in Pearl Jam.
Oh wait, huh?
Lead singer in Pearl Jam. Oh, Pearl Jam. He's a lead singer, Pearl Jam.
This is not in the movie.
Right.
Come a little closer, girl. I'll show you my scars. Because I'm guilty. Guilty as charged. I think we all remember where we were the first time we heard Dewey Cox sing those words. I was 13 years old, working at the corner store when Guilty as Charged came on the radio. It was a Where Are They Now block, but I knew right where I was. For the first time in my life, I knew just who I was. In that moment, though I was just a child, I understood what it meant to love and to lose love, to die and be reborn, to cry tears of joy and tears of blood. What the fuck is he talking about? For those 2 minutes, I was a 13-year-old outlaw, a sinner in search of redemption, a man with the body of a child, and the heart of a bloodthirsty killer. All at once,
yes,
I understood rock and roll.
Wow.
We heard him sing about walking hard. We learned a little something about how we wanted to walk. Just like every other teenager, I wanted to walk as hard as Dewey Cox.
Yeah.
But of course, nobody will ever walk as hard as Dewey Cox. Aww. He's been called the drifter, also the shapeshifter, the master chef, the chameleon, the problem child, the hard one, the white Indian, the giant midget. And of course, many know him as the TV spokesman for his line of Dewey Cox breakfast sausages.
All right. I told him I had to put that in there. But to an entire generation of
musicians, he will always be simply Cox. What do we think about?
All right, yeah, you'll be
sick. This is awesome.
Yeah,
wow, that was amazing.
You guys want to? There's another 2 minutes on that bad boy. If anyone wants to,
I'm definitely gonna check that out.
It's on YouTube. For the sake,
you know, he kind of
doesn't want to hear it all, but it is very funny, and I'm very curious about it because now I feel like I'm just watching more of the movie, which I never thought existed.
Yeah, that was great. You know, our friend Danny kind of looks like Eddie Vedder a little.
I can see it, in this current look of Eddie Vedder giving the speech. Speaking of old Danny boy, let's hear a voice memo.
Here we go.
I'm gonna count it off and play it if you guys want to play along, because it's just gonna be playing out to the podcast. So Corey and Brandon, if you want to hear it as well, I'm gonna hit
on go.
Do it on go. So 3, 2, 1, go. Here's a little mess. Oh, sorry. Sorry.
Do it on go.
Sorry, I fucked that up.
Don't do it on go.
I fucked that up. This is I was gonna intro first. This is a message from Danny. And this was in response to Bloodfart, old Bloodfart Brandini. Seeing if anyone want to leave a voicemail on the Discord. So here we go. 3, 2, 1, go.
I am Zeus, god of lightning. My favorite part of that whole entire movie is probably when he pops that fucking PCP and he's trying to lie to his wife about it, and then suddenly it just cuts to him on the top of in his underwear running down the street on the top of that building throwing out fake thunderbolts. I love every part of it. Hope you guys are having a good podcast, guys. What's up? Say what's up to the polar bears. Love you guys. And you guys picked a good movie. I hope you guys are having fun. Bye.
Wow, what a nice message. That was fun to get a voicemail in the
pod. Can you guys recap it? Because I could hear your said.
Ooh, you broke up there.
He said his favorite part was when he took the PCP and was running around the street with his underwear. And Danny said that he was throwing lightning bolts from the yeah. roof. But maybe that was in Dewey Cox's mind. But it seems like Danny somehow channeled that and saw them as well. Or knows what it's like maybe on when, you know.
Yeah, I was going to say, what was Danny
mainlining PCP, mainlining angel dust.
That was fun.
That was cool to sing a little snippet of Eddie Vedder. Let's hear some reviews from some critics out there. We gave it a certified fresh 75%. You guys good to keep on rolling? You want to take a break or anything?
Could I take a quick little pee and beer break?
Yes.
And beer break. Let's do it. We'll be right back.
Okay.
We're back.
Are we back?
We are back.
We are.
We are.
The dinosaur story.
Yeah.
We're back, everyone. Hello.
We've turned into dinosaurs.
Polarized pod, the Dewey Cox story. We got the call out from Danny. So do your best polar bear impression. That's a duck, Corey.
That's a duck, Corey.
Corey, all right, duck.
That's a duck. That's a fart.
That's a duck farting.
Yikes.
We brought the duck into quack and now the duck isn't even quacking anymore. It's farting.
What happened on this break, guys?
I thought we were just gonna do all bathroom stuff on the break and then we come back and we'd be okay, but
yeah, what you thought.
Yeah.
I don't know if Tim Meadows was in that bathroom. I don't know. We'll see. From Claudia Puig, USA Today, 3 out of 4. Cox rocks.
Yeah.
Claudia Puig gets it. Richard
is Schiffel, that all is that the whole review?
On Rotten Tomatoes, these are a little they have them all kind the of blurbs. Tabulated little blurbs, and that's what we're reading today. Richard Schickel, Time Magazine, call me a cynic, call me a curmudgeon, call me perverse. I loved every moment of Dewey Cox's story.
Okay, wow, what was that again? So he's perverse.
This guy's really willing to like put it all out there.
Richard Schickel, call me a cynic, call me a curmudgeon. Call me
a scumbag.
I loved every. Yeah, I love it when you.
He just wants us to talk asshole. To him.
Yeah, you don't have to make us complicit in your fetish here, Richard.
Come on, Richard. Come on, Richard. Dick.
Come on, Dick.
From Jack Matthews, New York Daily News. 3 out of 4. There are a few too many lazy jokes played off Dewey's last name, but not nearly enough to wipe that grin off your face.
Thousands of them, I think.
Thousands. Brandon's- Did not care for it, this guy.
No. Oh, so thousands back on the table.
Back on the menu. Roger Ebert. Back on the menu. We'll do this blurb and then I'll get to something else he said is funny at the end of his review, but he gave it a 3 out of 4 and he says,
oh, you gotta say that.
Instead of sending everything over the top at high energy like Top Secret or Airplane, they allow Riley to more or less actually play the character so that against all expectations, some scenes actually approach real sentiment.
Yeah. Wow.
I think that sentiment goes a long way. And then
that's Roger Ebert, right?
Yeah, that was right at the end. And then right after that, on his review, it says note, as in like almost like an asterisk or like a P.S.
Note. Yeah.
Note. I must mention one peculiar element in the film. As Riley is having a telephone conversation, a male penis is framed in the upper right corner of the screen. No explanation about why or who it belongs to or what happens to it. Just a penis.
That's not true.
I think this just about establishes a standard for gratuitous nudity. Speculate as I will, I cannot imagine why it's in the film. Did the cinematographer look through his viewfinder and say, Jake, the upper right corner could use a penis?
No, it was about that guy was just like bugging him while he was on the phone with his wife, asking him just dumb bullshit. Like it was fucking hilarious.
It was, yeah.
I
took Ebert to be a prude.
yeah, right.
I think I don't think he's being a prude. I think he's just saying like he didn't get the joke. Basically, the point,
yeah. Apparently, I had a lot
like
of
it
different.
It was a public service announcement. That's what it came off to me is like. Just know there's penis in this movie.
Well, that's kind of what he's saying. Is like there was no organic reason,
contextual
for it,
reason.
But I disagree.
There was a bunch of.
I disagree.
There were a bunch of naked people around. You saw a bunch of boobs. Yeah. Why wouldn't you see?
No, the whole point is he's his wife is asking him all mundane, like, you know. For him, he just, I forget what, I think he had just done
naked people.
Yeah.
He just had
an orgy. He smoked weed for the first time. And that led to an orgy. Yeah. And then his wife's like talking about, you know, doing the dishes or something. There's a guy going, hey, I'm going to get a coffee. You want me?
Like, I'm okay, Bert.
That was fucking funny. That was hilarious.
And then he shows up again when his dad shows up. I mean,
and then she goes, who was that? And he goes, oh, just this guy asking me if I wanted a coffee or anything.
It was Bert.
Yeah, I thought that was amazing.
They had a lot of different test screenings where they messed with the length of time that they had the dong on screen. Because it was too short, people didn't laugh at all, and it was kind of like, what was a little bit more of that? Like, what was the point of that? But they had to leave it just a little bit longer, so they like got a second wave of like, oh, okay, we're really doing this.
Well, it's funny too because you don't see the guy's face at the same time as you see his dick. It's just like
very flaccid
dick in the frame. Like,
then he also asks, "Where's my flip flop?"
Yeah. Well, that I think concerned about that.
See him later, and he has a coffee, and he's in flip flops. He's totally nude.
Okay, so I don't know. I think that part's fucking so funny. Like in hindsight, so funny. Because he's supposed to be like living these. You know, the joke is almost like, oh, his wife is just like so concerned with domestic things. Like, is he not? Like, these are things. Where are my flip flops? Those are pretty, you know, mundane things too. So I don't know. That shit's fucking funny.
Too good. We'll do one more from critics. Kenneth Turan, LA Times, 4 out of 5. This gleeful skewering of American popular music works because of the talents of director Jake Kasdan and a cast led by John C. Reilly.
Yep.
That was a good movie, thanks to the director and the actor.
Liked it for these reasons.
Let's go on to the audience side of things, which this is one of those situations I should say up front, like 57% from the audience is kind of almost misleading from a lot of other sites that I've pulled reviews. I'm curious about ratings and reviews from. And also just like word on the street, you know. I haven't talked to a single person that's like, that movie sucks. I've just talked to people that are like, what movie? I've never seen that.
Yeah. That's like borderline shocking to me that the score. I can't. It's hard to wrap my head around.
Yeah. Most of the other websites to find reviews, most of them are like positive on this movie. And here, I mean, 57 is pretty low, and it's
pretty low.
Something that I feel like in a way is pulled from the times when Rotten Tomatoes was first starting to become really like relevant way to rate movies. And I think it's those reviews have stuck out from then. I don't think these are newer reviews because I feel like if people were to revisit this, it works even fucking better now.
In my opinion,
but
yeah.
Let's hear some negative audience reviews from 1 star from Rebel is Dav. Titled A Definitive Top 5 Stinker.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't normally write reviews. I have other things to spend my time on. But in this instance, my commitment to save my fellow human beings from undue suffering.
Oh, what a public service.
Guided me to do the right thing. The bottom line is that the script directly parallels every scene in the Walk the Line movie. Not a glimmer of original thought at all. Okay, so this is supposed to be a parody. But isn't a parody supposed to be funny? Or at least thought-provoking? This film is neither.
By definition, yes. Sure.
Unfunny script and terrible acting to boot with nothing at all of a redeeming nature. All in all, a painful experience. I've watched thousands of movies in my lifetime, and this makes my top 5 worst list without reservation.
I love that he has a top five worst.
What's yeah, the I want to see that.
Yeah.
Isn't that a
super bad? Yeah, right? Idiot.
Fucking dummy.
Dummy.
I feel like you felt personally
attacked.
Well, no, it's just, I don't know. I like how he taking it in as though he just loved Ryan so fucking much that this movie like offends him, you know, credited, you know,
yeah,
a line, so to speak.
Right.
It walked the line too.
She also mentions the parody of it as well, and it not being funny. It makes you think. So do you think that person's older? Or
I don't know.
Same age as
maybe us? They don't like funny stuff.
Yeah, that's yeah.
They hate laughing.
That's yeah. That's beyond age. Mm-hmm. Transcends it.
They have some real problems. I know that.
Wow. Yeah.
Put them no in joy. Body bag.
Yeah. See ya next.
Yeah.
Lainey okay. says it's a titled disgusting movie, one star, and just says perverse.
Oh, yeah. Boy. Yeah.
Perverse.
Alt bike, one star, titled zero stars. So they didn't have the zero star option, but they titled it. I pushed through the first 15 minutes, then gave up, wasted my money. John C. Reilly is an amazing actor. This was a mistake for him.
Mm. Wow. So that person.
15 minutes, huh? Okay. I don't know. Anyone who there's movies that I know sooner than that I'm going to hate. Finish watching it.
R. Blake like, McLaren, one star, starts funny, drags on. The humor gets old and shallow. This movie is too long and boring. The first 20 minutes are great, and then it just spirals into a brain dead abyss. Don't recommend.
Oof.
So that's almost the inverse. They love that opening, and then they just
right
anything past 20 minutes. Ooh, forget about it.
Mm-hmm.
KMK, one star, titled Waste of Time. My son wanted to see this and we rented it one night. I can never get that time back.
Damn.
We'll
Damn
do one, robbed.
One more from Richard Wells, titled One Joke. Gave it a one star. Bah! What? That's what they... B-A-H! Exclamation mark. Bah!
Yeah. That's a bah.
A one-joke movie that drives every cliche deep into the ground. Recommend this is Spinal Tap, the gold standard for this genre.
Okay.
Okay.
Wow. Well, and it all comes back full circle. There are other different movies.
You know, that is a good point.
Compared to this one.
That is a good point. Maybe we should that like tell these people that point. There's like other movies that they could watch and said that they might like better.
It sounds like they know.
Right.
Or if you like that movie, go watch that movie that you're talking about.
Yeah, you can always watch other movies.
They're different, so you can do that.
Yeah, if you like my old, buy my old album.
Mm-hmm. you said it.
Yeah, buddy. Let's give a score ourselves. Corey, do you want to get us started? Any final thoughts? Any thoughts about the polarizing nature of it? And a score from 0 to 100.
Yeah, sure.
Or you can go first, second, last, whichever you prefer.
Yeah.
I'll go first.
As long as you walk hard.
Yes.
I feel like it's respectful.
Review hard.
It's respectful of the host to, you know.
Yeah.
I'll set you guys up for the big.
You are the guest.
Big shebang. Yeah. Yeah. I'll keep it warm for you.
Nice.
Anyway. I was surprised that when you guys, we were talking about what movie that we wanted to do, because it's been a while. It's been a while since I've been on the pod and kind of going through our options. I could not believe that this was a polarizing movie like that. And then once I, you know, knew that it was, I was like, oh, critics must have hated it. Cause I couldn't imagine as an audience member going to see this movie and thinking like anything other than how fantastic it is. But different strokes, different movies for different folks. But I loved it. I loved rewatching it yesterday. I would say it's probably one of my top 10 comedies that I've ever seen. It's just that good. So yeah, really special one for me. I'll give it a 95%.
95. I love having a spicy movie, a movie that we enjoy. We broadcasted that right off the top. and we got you. Yeah, we got you on Hook. We had you on Fear and Loathing. Like, these are the movies that, yeah, are surprising movies, when they're like tabulated up in these, in these numbers on review sites that they get divided. But I'll just roll into my review here. I absolutely love this movie. It's always been one of those that I would show to people if they were looking for a comedy, or for like a lit, like we're trying to find a movie to watch. And then like, I would, that would be one of those questions. I'd be like, well, have you seen Walk Hard, if we're trying to find something funny to watch? Cause it was always one that I found that like, I almost felt like an ambassador for this movie a little bit, of like, I feel like not enough people have seen it. And so I would want to ask that question and want to like show it to them. Cause I always thought it was so great. I had the DVD, and had memorable times of this movie. There was one time in college, I remember we all gathered around and with a bunch of people that hadn't watched it, and it fucking slayed, man. Everyone had a good time. And that's pretty much every occasion I've watched it. And I watched it with my brother-in-law recently, Devin, which you guys have met, and he should be on the podcast soon. And we just bonded even more, and other people were there that I, you know, I've taken a poll and the poll has been good, and it's not representative of what's on Rotten Tomatoes. So I'm like letting you know that the people love this movie. I would recommend it above many comedies. It is one of my, I'm so glad you put it like that, Corey, because it is one of my favorite comedies ever. And to get right down to it, because I feel like I've lauded enough praise, like you guys all get it. I love it. I don't need to go through it, but I was almost getting to the score. Like I was like, should I give it a, it can't be perfect because it's like a parody or it's a satire or something, was like my reasoning of like, maybe I shouldn't give it a perfect score, but I say, fuck that. It's a perfect fucking movie. And it's a comedy 100, like way 100% through. So it deserves 100% as far as a comedic movie goes, a satire or a parody, however you want to put it. Those deserve good scores too, if not perfect scores. And that performance from John C. Reilly, all those, all the talents coming together at the perfect time when this movie came out. And it is going to continue to be a super replayable movie for me, super rewatchable. And I'd highly recommend it to anyone who hasn't seen it, who's still listening to this. And on to you, Brandini.
So I'm going to be joining you, James. This movie is 100%.
Yeah.
In my mind.
Let me get back in there too. Cause I mean, once you said that, I was like, yeah, why did I even then, like,
yeah, why,
there's
why
not, would I, there, that's there's the not a of
going
single,
first. It's hard.
I know.
There, yeah.
There's not a single like thing that I don't absolutely love. There's like, it's like we said earlier, there's no like,
it's funny T to B.
No fat on there. So yeah, fuck it. Officially changed God. Me up to.
Yes.
It feels so good.
It feels so good, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Because it feels good because we just saw an incredible movie and we've gotten to share that experience with each other. And this movie is one of the best comedies I've ever seen. Yeah. Giving it 100%. I went through the same process of, why would I give this something less than perfect? I enjoyed every minute of it.
Yep, exactly.
I laughed the entire time.
Sometimes it's that simple, you know?
It's just that simple. Yeah, I would just say, again, this movie is fucking funny.
I would even say, like, it doesn't require you watching Walk the Line or Ray or other music biopics. Doesn't require it. Definitely
rewards
helps.
It rewards it.
Definitely rewards it.
Doesn't require it.
Definitely helps. Maybe being, like, music aware. The only criticism I heard from this is my sister, when we were watching it, was saying she felt that we were already laughing before the jokes were even said.
Yeah, which is
kind of like the best.
That is a compliment.
Yeah, that's not a critique.
That's the best compliment you could give to a movie too, because the people who have seen it time and time again are already anticipating the parts where it's going to be funny. So that would be the only criticism. And 100%. I know it can't beat Danny's 140, but maybe next time we see him,
you know what? Hey, it's okay.
get a ranking from him.
But he loved that one scene with the thunderbolt.
So. Yes.
Yeah.
Make sure you rewatch again. There are thunderbolts. If you don't notice, that's IMDb trivia. Yeah. There are thunderbolts. Before we go, let's do a little game.
Yes!
We're doing the Ranker game. It's a new, newish game that I got going, for the pod. There's this website called Ranker. You can look up a movie and it shows you all the lists that those movies are ranked in. So I'm going to pull a couple categories from all of these lists that we got here and see if you guys can guess where Walk Hard is ranked within those lists of movies. So let's get going here. Corey, as per usual for the guests, you are going to start. The first category here is out of 28 Judd Apatow movies, where does Walk Hard rank in terms of the best of the Judd Apatow movies? From 1 to 28, where would you rate Walk Hard?
He's done 28.
That surprised these are just, me too. Like produced these are just, too.
Yeah.
Judd Apatow. It has to be because he didn't direct this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Right, right. So in the Judd Apatow universe.
Judd Apatow verse.
28 films.
Ooh, this is interesting. I'm, okay.
And they're all.
Let's give it 100%. So, I mean, it, yeah, I feel like in our mind, it's.
And it's one kind of quick
the top spot.
One quick clarification. These are all different movies.
Yes,
I think so. Yeah. I think so. Yes, yes, yes.
I think we've established yes, right?
I mean, life is fluid. Spectrum more than A to Z, you know?
Damn, you're blowing my mind again.
As if they're all the same, then I just say number one.
I think that's why we say Apatow verse, you know?
Right, yeah, right.
That's different.
But it's like a soup, you know? You're trying to take a little bit out, but maybe you... Yeah, we got a... This Walk Hard is like a little piece of tomato or a potato or tomato that we're trying to pull out of the soup.
I'm not sure I followed that analogy.
This is helping the metaphor, right?
I think I got it.
This is helping. Yeah, this is helping.
Yeah.
Yes.
This is making it clearer for everybody.
Yeah, right. Well, okay. So now I'm thinking like it might be further down the list if there's that many that is so, you know, a classic movie that I wouldn't necessarily. But anyway, let me say like 13. Yeah.
Okay. 13 out of 5. You're ranking it very high. Very good.
Yeah.
Corey, you almost fucking nailed it, my friend. Yes. It is number 12. You were this close. This close. You get the point. You get the point. Yeah. You're going to 3.
Wow.
First,
I mean, I vehemently disagree with that ranking. I'm just thinking.
No, yeah, great.
In general,
some of them are pretty absurd, but you know, we're going with the Ranker system, and that's what we're.
What was number one?
Number one is 40-year-old virgin.
Okay,
that's cool.
Not a bad select for
not my number one, but I get it.
Number two, Superbad.
Yeah,
cool.
All right, so we're moving on. This is going to be to Brandonio. This category is, let me see exactly how many movies are in this category first. I apologize for the delay. Okay. It is out of 23 movies, where does Walk Hard rank on the movies that you never expected to show skin?
Okay. Roger Ebert.
Yeah.
I don't know how you'd rank that and out of expectation, but
he put it number one
out of
23.
Okay. This is so 16. I'm going to go like towards the back end. I'm going to say 21.
21.
I think it just barely cracked the.
Gotcha. This was extremely close. You guys were one away.
Oh,
from winning or losing, but unfortunately for you, Brandon, Corey wins again.
Unfortunately
for Brandon. No.
Damn.
For who?
I got my butt kicked last night too with Maddie.
But fortunately for Corey, he's kicking butt and taking.
He's kicking. Yeah.
Damn, you guys did a back to back.
It worked out that way. Night? Yeah. We're on the release. It's strange. It was a week off from the release, but we recorded like three within this past week. So it's,
my God,
we're all going to catch up.
Absolute workhorses over here.
killing it. Anytime you want to come back in the pod, Corey, we just pump on them out.
Please do.
Yeah, let's do one. Yeah. Let's do one tomorrow. Tomorrow.
All right.
So yeah, that was number 19 on movies.
You guys need a break.
Never expected to show skin out of 23. And yes, Corey, you were you selected 21. You guys, I don't think you would guess number one.
What was the actual ranking?
It was 19 out of 23 was where ranked, and you hit 21, Brandon was 16. So it was almost, I could do Price is Right rules,
but
I shy away from the.
Thank God you aren't.
Thank God.
I'd be down 0-2.
Fortunately for you. The number one movie that we never expected to show skin is Howard the Duck. You see those duck titties.
Oh my God.
Yikes. Oh God.
And you cannot expect that. All right. So we got 2-0. Corey's going for the win here. Let's see if he can pull it off. We're going with live action movies with surprisingly great animated sequences. Let's see how many. I'm sorry, I got to pull up how many movies are on this list.
A lot, right? It's going to be a lot.
There are 14 movies on this list, and I want you to tell me where Walk Hard ranks on live action movies with surprisingly great animated sequences, that being the Yellow Submarine portion of the movie. To you, Corey.
Yeah, so live action movies with surprisingly great animated sequences. That's how
surprisingly great animated sequences. Yeah,
surprisingly, yeah.
Surprisingly great is the operative word there. Not just like, I didn't expect this, but a really unexpectedly good or great. I'll just say great.
Okay.
Synonym for good.
Right.
Anyway, five.
Number five is your selection.
Yep.
Out of 14.
Five out of 14, correct.
I'm going to say 13.
13 out of 14. It is number 10. Brandon, you got yourself a point.
What? Yeah.
Unfortunately for you, Corey, Brandon gets the point.
Can you say it every time that unfortunately for so and so
this person got a point. That would be I'm so sorry, but that is correct, and that means that Corey did not get it.
Listeners are gonna be like, what?
So number one was Kill Bill Volume 1. We can all remember that.
Oh shit, yeah.
The assassination scene under the bed and all that good stuff.
What was number two? Because I'm trying to think of like some of these movies. And
number one, Kill Bill Volume 1. Number two, Hellboy 2, The Golden Army.
Oh yeah.
Number three, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 1. And that I distinctly remember that.
Really?
Yeah,
I never saw that.
Hallows story. Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's fine. Yeah, it's good.
You're surprised. You're like, am I really? Wow, this is surprisingly good animation.
Surprisingly great.
You're so right. Oh, Corey was so more tuned into that. It's surprising that I won.
I want to hear the rest of them. Can you cycle through them real quick?
All right.
I just want to hear which ones.
We'll do speed round. Some of them are kind of silly because I feel like obviously they have animation.
Oh, go ahead.
Bedknobs and Broomsticks. Mary Poppins, number five. Mm-hmm. Number six, Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Oh, cool.
Number seven, Priest. Don't know what that is. Number eight, Scott Pilgrim versus the World. That one
makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah,
oh,
definitely.
Yeah.
Number nine, Natural Born Killers. Another polarizing movie.
What's the animation there?
I'm looking at a picture of it right here. It almost looks like, like very acid, melted kind of like, or what's that like hot rod kind of animation like they do with cars and stuff, that kind of thing. Most of the film is shot in live action. There are a few notable animated sequences, many of which are intended to suggest the heightened and distorted senses of the film's protagonist. Because animation has the ability to capture a different sense of reality than live action, these moments, disturbing, primal, and even bestial, give greater insight into the minds of these troubled and broken souls. I think they're very like quick kind of like bestial. Yeah, edited in there. Number 10, Walk Hard. Number 11, Annie Hall. Number 12, Better Off Dead. Number 13, The Fall, that movie. Number 14, Booksmart. I don't remember that part.
Booksmart is awesome. That movie, that's isn't that claymation?
It's like stop motion.
Yeah, stop motion. Wow.
All right, moving on. Let's go to our next category, and I believe it goes to Brandon.
Unfortunately, it does.
Unfortunately for you, Corey, it goes to Brandon as first selection. I don't know, maybe you want to be second. This category is the best movies about music.
Out cocks.
The best cocks in movies.
I would hope it would be number one.
This is gonna be a big category. This is out of 171.
And I'm so sorry, I talked over you, but what was the name of the list?
Best movies about music.
Oh, okay. There's a few of those different ones. I'm sorry,
what's the number again?
This is a big one. 171. Let's do a big one. See what happens.
Okay. 72.
72. From Brandini.
Holy shit.
171 movies about music. Who would have thought?
I mean, it can't be that close.
And I'm going to read them all after you guess.
Oh my gosh. 113.
Nice. Into the hundreds. Brandini was very close, actually, all things considering, is number 82. And he got 72. So well done. Number one That's movie about music, The Blues Brothers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Number two, Walk the Line.
Wow. Oh, shut up.
Oh my God.
Fuck off.
So 82 Jeez. For this one and 82. Number two for the real one.
Jeez.
If you want to call it that. All right. So we got the tiebreaker here.
POG.
I think I'm gonna this category seems like a pretty fun one. Let's do to Corey 13 horrific moments and otherwise silly comedies. And so that moment will be it's gotta be
the having.
Dewey Cox cuts his brother. That's a singular. Cuts his brother. And,
James, are you okay?
I'm sorry, I had an aneurysm. It's when there's multiple around, the family. It's when there's just one, then it's Dewey Cox. Dewey Cox cuts his brother in half and walk hard, the Dewey Cox story. Where does that rank?
Where does it rank?
To you, Corey, out of 13.
That's the name of this game, right? Where does it rank?
Where does that rank? That's a good one. I don't really have a full name.
So where does it rank on movies that have one gruesome scene that you're not expecting?
I like that title, but it's 13 horrific moments and otherwise silly comedies.
Okay. I was way off. Okay. 13. Let's go. Let's just plug up the works. 7.
Number four. Right in the middle. All right.
Yeah.
I'm going to go 4.
Number 4. Corey nailed it. It is number 7. So he definitely wins you get multiple points for that. I mean, decided that because that was the first time that's ever been done. Congratulations. You nailed it right on the money. I'm pretty almost positive no one's done that before.
The standard's been set, everyone.
Wait, hold on. Hold on.
Yeah, very nice. Yeah. Woo! It's the best one we guessed under. Oh.
Sorry to toot my own horn here. Oh, yeah, that's a sad horn.
Toot that horn. Don't toot the other horn. Okay, that's done. All right, that was the last one. Make sure you watch Frogtown. This was one of my favorite episodes I've ever done. This is one of my favorite movies I've ever watched. You guys are my favorite people, so I'm having a pretty great time. I've had a top.
Yeah.
Top time of this podcast, top ep. So thank you so much to you and anyone else listening here. Corey, is there anything that you feel like you want to say that you didn't get to? Anything you want to plug? Your wonderful band?
Yeah,
do it. Your solo stuff? Anything like that? Or I can plug it for you.
I think it's all been plugged. But
it's all been plugged.
Album?
But one thing I just thought was kind of cool. Maybe we do a ranker list every polarized episode.
Ooh.
And Ooh, you know,
this is my favorite.
And then, and maybe next time I'm on the pod, we'll play that
game. Damn.
I don't know.
We never did like 100 episode bash, so maybe we could rank the first 100 or something like that.
Oh. What are you on now? Do you know?
This would be, like, I can find out. This
I'm going to say 132.
I was keeping y'all stats for a while, but I you guys got too big. I can't.
We move quick. We are Roadhouse was 108. 108. And then wow, this, yeah, happened. This should be 109.
I haven't even listened to that one yet. Jesus Christ.
Also a great app. That Evan Moore is a wonderful guest.
Oh, Evan's on it?
And knows a lot about the
world
of movie making.
Yeah.
No, it's his first time, I think, seeing them.
First time seeing it. Yeah.
Yeah.
But he provided amazing. Excellent commentary on.
He provided like, cause,
well, he's a bit of a filmmaker.
Yeah.
Himself,
so. It's the best. Yeah. That's where we're at.
It's a fresh perspective, too, because it was, you know, it's nice to have a counterpoint to us just being like, well, this movie's great.
Right. Right. He did not like it, I guess.
No, that's not true. Listen. Check out the app.
Well, let me ask you this.
Nice, Brandon.
Does he think that there are different movies? I'm looking for it like a industry guy's
that. We got to do that every episode now. We got to establish that before we get into anything.
I think you should.
A lot of firsts on this app, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's kind of groundbreaking.
I mean,
yeah.
There's two roadhouses out there, or should I say
one? Loop House?
There's only one, really. It's all.
Oh, no spoilers.
It's all been done. I've had a blast. Brandini, is there anything else you want to say about Walk Hard or your life or anything you want to plug?
Oh, wow.
I want to plug this pod. Please.
Plug this pod.
Rating works, you know, just do that. But if you want to comment, you know, if we suck, tell us. Who cares?
I'm
totally I don't give a shit. I don't give a rat's ass.
As long as you walk hard, review hard, do what your body tells you to do and nothing else. And don't do anything I wouldn't do. Those are the two rules.
Nice. And
that's good advice.
Rate, review, subscribe, and mean it. All I ask is that you fucking mean it.
James just wants to see some fucking authenticity.
God damn it. And it's not a difficult ask.
Yeah. Be honest. That should be like,
the default.
Yeah. That should be right up there on your.
Either way, I love you and I hope you've enjoyed yourself and I will see you next time. Goodbye.
Bye.
Either way, I love you.